to order. We need approval of the August 5th, 2005 minutes. Do I have a motion?
Move.
Thank you, Senator Schrader moves that we approve the minutes for the August 5th, 2005 e-board. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Received reports. Representative Winters.
Which report? Sorry, I'm not listening. The human sub. Am I right? You called me and I didn't even know who you were. Sorry, Mrs. Chair. He'll have my agenda in front of
me. Why we accomplished this objection.
Oh, the inbox.
Pony?
The pony. I don't have the pony.
You read ponies?
Yes, I do read ponies.
What one are you looking at?
The report of the on the M-Block.
The House looking at. Do you mind you just
the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approves M-Block the following four agency reports as described in the Legislative Fiscal Office's analysis. Item number four, Department of Transportation acknowledge receipt of report on real-time access to driving records. Item number 18, Military Department acknowledge receipt of report on the Oregon National Guard response to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Item number 24, Department of Land Conservation and Development and Department of Administrative Services acknowledge receipt of report on implementation of ballot measure 37. Item number 27, Department of Forestry acknowledge receipt of report on the 2005 fire season and the department's use of severity resources.
Discussion.
No objections.
Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Submission of federal grant applications in block. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve in block the following three requests for approval to apply for federal grants as described in the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis. Item 22, Economic and Community Development Department, a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency grant for brownfields assessment for grant for Oregon's port facilities. Item 26, Department of Forestry, a U.S. Department of Homeland Security grant for fire prevention and safety grant. Item 30, Department of State Lands, a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration grant to study restoration of Olympic oysters in the South Slough Estuary grant. The subcommittee recommendation is made with the understanding that if the funds are awarded, the agencies will return to the Emergency Board or Legislative Assembly for approval of additional federal funds, expenditure limitation, and any necessary position authority.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Item number one, Department of Education, Senator Devlin.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $4,893,114 from the Special Purpose Appropriation to the Emergency Board for caseload growth in the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program. This program serves children with disabilities and their families to improve the developmental status and school readiness of each child. Due to the difficulty in predicting caseload changes over a two-year period, the 2005 Legislative Assembly reduced the department's budget for the program by $4.9 million and established a like amount as a special purpose appropriation for potential caseload changes. This amount assumes growth of about 2% per year. Caseload growth is expected to be more than double what was originally projected for 2005-2007. The increase over the previous projection is attributed in part to greater efforts to identify eligible children. Allocation of the $4.9 million will address a portion of the estimated cost of caseload growth. The department plans to return to the Emergency Board with updated information on caseload increases and available federal funding for the program. At that time, it may need to request additional general fund resources for the program. The Education Subcommittee recommends its approval, and for a fairly clear indication of this, I would anticipate that what they would do is be looking at projections, and we would be talking about the next school year after this school year.
discussion?
Madam Chairman, I'm going to be a no, and I'd like to explain that. I was a no in committee because, not because I don't recognize the value of this program, because I do, it's just I felt it would be more prudent fiscally if we were to split this allocation up until a further e-board once we have a handle on what we would expect for next year's caseload growth to be, and that's my only reason why.
Thank you. Further discussion? Other than Representative Krupp, do we have any other no's? Without objection. Noting that Representative Krupp is a no. Item number two, Senator Schrader.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $2 million and approve the establishment of two permanent positions, 1.13 FTE, for the implementation of Senate Bill 1071, which establishes the Oregon Virtual School District, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $1 million in limitation until a more detailed budget for the second year of the Oregon Virtual Schools District project is provided to both the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department of Administrative Services. Senate Bill 1071, passed by the 2005 Legislative Assembly, creates a virtual school district within the Department of Education. The bill was intended to address the lack of statutory and administrative guidance for school districts that offer online courses. The purpose of the district is to provide online courses and meet statutory academic content standards and State Board of Education criteria for public school students in grades K-12. Department expects contract with other school other public entities such as school and education service districts, public charter schools, and state institutions of higher education to provide these courses. The legislation provides for $2 million to be transferred in 2005-07 from the state school fund to the Oregon Virtual School District Fund for implementation of the program. Department requires limitations to spend these dollars as well as position authority for the program's implementation, and hence the request. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Krupp.
You're going to be hearing a fair amount from me today. I'm going to grudgingly agree with this request, and the reason I say grudgingly is because I am the chairman of the board of Oregon's first virtual online charter school here in Oregon. And $2 million for the department to develop a number of items in relation to virtual online school is to me not an appropriate expenditure because, frankly, they can get it for free from the private sector who already is engaged in this activity as the virtual online charter school that I chair the board has available to them. So, but I do recognize the great advances in technology and the opportunity that it is for some students who do not fit into the public school system necessarily. And I think we should go forward with it. I think any advancement in this direction is a positive advancement, even though I'm concerned that the expenditure is not necessary. So I will vote yes.
Further discussion? Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe in this particular case the legislature has made the decision in terms of the allocation of funds. This is actually part of the agreement on the 5.240. It is actually part of the state school fund. It is one of the few items where every education interest that comes to the legislature was actually in agreement on this session. Representative Flores and I attended basically a conference about a year or so ago on e-learning, and I think our eyes were open, wide open, to be honest, by that, because the technology has advanced to such a level and the opportunities are going to be so great for Oregon students. We know that there are a host of programs at the university, community college, and ESD level. What is really lacking is the coordination of all those programs and the ability for any student to access them anywhere they are in the state. I've talked to a number of members who are from rural districts who look at this as being a real benefit to their districts, a real benefit to their students. And also the opportunities available from public charter schools will be available online through the system also. So I think it's going to open up a lot of opportunities for Oregon's children.
Further discussion?
Just very quickly. Thank you. I would just share with this group very quickly. I'm getting ready to enter a doctoral program, and I'm taking a class via this mechanism, and it is phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal what's available in terms of the two-way communication that can occur. So I'd encourage any of you to really explore this because it is neat for Oregon.
Do we have any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, it's ordered. Item number 3, Department of Aviation. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve 2003 Other Funds Capital Construction Expenditure Limitation Increase of $1,899,999. Establish another funds expenditure limitation for debt service and transfer $112,050 from other funds. Expenditure limitation for operations of the newly established expenditure category for the Aviation Salem office building. In 2003, the Department of Aviation requested a $2 million capital construction expenditure limitation to replace the Aviation Salem office building. 50-year-old office building systems and structures are failing, and the legislature approved a $1 other funds capital construction expenditure limitation with the understanding that the details of the project would need further review by the legislature. The department proposes to co-locate with the Oregon Military Department's Salem Armory Aviation Facility and Weapons of Mass Destruction Civil Support Team facility occupying 5,300 square feet in a 49,000 square foot one-story facility with a separate 4,800 square foot industrial building constructed for equipment shop and parts storage. The department proposes to finance the construction with certificates of participation. Debt service costs for the 2005-07 are estimated to be $112,050, with the payment due May 1st, 2007. Aviation has sufficient other funds expenditure limitation to absorb the cost of issuance of the COPs. The General Government Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Discussion. Senator Courtney, did you have something
else? Is there any recommendation there involving Representative Wayne Scott and his airplane? Because
what airplane?
He has some needs.
He has needs. This is actually just Salem, so he would have to. He has to fly in and out of Salem only.
Well, Representative Cupps also, he wants to be in there because he owns several planes. So
we'll pencil him in.
They all want hangers too.
Hangers too.
My problem, Senator, is that all of my airplanes are model airplanes at this time. They're hanging in my office at home.
We're going to save some money.
Further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Item number 5, Board of Pharmacy, Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board establish a $50,000 federal funds expenditure limitation. This would be to develop a revised proposal for a prescription drug monitoring program with the understanding that Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $30,000 of it until the agency demonstrates the need for the expenditure limitation. Subcommittee also recommends the agency provide a report to the Emergency Board describing the current problem in Oregon and how the proposed program will address the problem. At January 2004 meeting, the E-Board approved the Oregon Board of Pharmacy to apply for a $350,000 U.S. Department of Justice grant to develop this program. The grant was awarded in July 2004. But to be eligible for the grant funds, states must enact legislation requiring the submission of controlled substance prescription data to a central database administered by an authorized state agency. To satisfy this requirement, the board proposed Senate Bill 180 during the 2005 session. The bill received two public hearings, but was still in committee upon adjournment. Without the enabling legislation, only the planning portion of the grant, up to the $50,000, can be spent. Access to the planning funds will allow the board to develop a revised proposal for the 2007 session. The revised proposal is expected to address concerns regarding data security, privacy, and ongoing funding for the program. There's no obligation to repay expended planning funds if the enabling legislation is not passed in 2007. It will not cost the state any dollars. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussions? Objection? Beginning of the order. Department of Administrative Services, item number 7, Representative Weston.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry.
The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board acknowledge receipt of the compensation plan report. The Department of Administrative Services is required under ORS 291.371 to report state salary plan changes to the Legislative Review Agency, the Joint Ways and Means Committee during the session, and emergency board during the interim. The report is divided into 13 sections describing compensation and benefit change negotiations with various bargaining units and established for non-representative and management employees. The legislature directed the general fund cost of the compensation plan changes be identified in this report would be covered by a $130 million special purpose appropriation to the emergency board. Allocation of this special purpose appropriation will be requested by the department at a future emergency board meeting during the interim. The request will also include the associated expenditure limitation increases for lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds necessary to implement the compensation plan changes. The subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Discussion.
Madam Chair, I am a no for philosophical reasons. I will share that with you now. I appreciate and I believe it was proper that we would certainly fund increases for state employees, as I think they nobly sacrificed at the governor's request in the 03 session to not take pay increases given our financial condition. I appreciate that. I think they should deserve them clearly in this budget. The reason I'm voting no, however, is I disagree with the addition of a new step on top of all the salary ranges. I don't think that's appropriate at this time. It's $13 million. We have a $55 million hole in DHS budget, and that is my sole reason for voting no as a symbolic gesture at this time.
Further discussion? With the one objection, is there any other objection besides report? Seeing none, so ordered. Chair skipped over item number six. Representative Smith.
Yep. Madam Co-Chair, the General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the federal fund expenditure limitation by $397,000 for the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research to conduct work under a federal grant received from the Health Research Services Administration. The Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research received legislative approval to apply for a federal grant during the 05 session. The office has now been awarded a grant of $397,000 and is requesting expenditure limitation for grant activities. The grant funds will be used to conduct analysis and help develop plans to reduce the number of Oregonians without health insurance. Essentially, work under the grant will provide improved health insurance coverage data and ways to enable access to health insurance coverage for those currently without it. The grant requires no state matching funds, and the subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion. Objection? So ordered. Item number eight, Senator Carter. Senator Carter's not here.
Okay.
That's a little lame, getting it?
Gavel, come down, Senator.
Did I get picked?
Yes, sir.
Yes, okay. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a status report on the Computing and Networking Infrastructure Consolidation Project. The legislature previously approved the consolidation of the data center operations and the construction of a new state data center. The budget report for the bill that funded the data center consolidation and operation included a budget note that requires the Department of Administrative Services to report on progress of the consolidation effort to each meeting of the emergency board. The project is on schedule. The newly constructed state data center has been certified as a Tier 3 facility, 99,982% system availability or uptime, specifically designed to provide secure, reliable operations. The next steps are to connect the existing state network to the state data center and begin moving agency data center operations to the center. The state data center is expected to assume network management responsibilities November 1, 2005. The transfer of the three largest data centers will take place during the following months and are targeted for completion in June 30, 2006. Following the consolidation of the Big Three, operations of the remaining nine agencies will be transferred to the state data center. The implementation plan has been changed slightly since the budget was approved. The changes were A, to install the network infrastructure upfront instead of developing and connecting it to as agencies come on board, and B, to wait to hire all the full-time data center staff until further into the implementation.
The subcommittee is satisfied that the changes are for the good and have not impacted the overall implementation and completion date. Subcommittee recommends your approval.
Discussion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kraft.
Kudos for, you know, we should acknowledge when government does it right. And in this case, the government working with private contractors have delivered on the construction of the facility under budget and ahead of schedule. And I think we ought to acknowledge them and thank them for a job well done.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Item number 10, Department of Human Services and Department of Justice, Senator Gordon.
Thank you, and good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board allocate $2,497,924 from the Special Appropriation to the Emergency Board for Child Welfare Staffing and Legal Representation. Increase federal funds expenditure limitation by $2,156,619 and approve the establishment of 32 permanent full-time positions, meaning 24 FTE, in the Department of Human Services, and increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $1,551,389 and approve the establishment of 10 permanent full-time positions, meaning 7.50 FTE, in the Department of Justice to improve legal representation of child welfare cases, child welfare caseworkers in juvenile court proceedings involving child protective services. The 2005 legislature did not approve the governor's budget request to add funding and staff for child welfare legal representation. The Department of Human Services and the Department of Justice have developed a revised proposal to address the legislature's concerns. The current proposal reduces the scope and cost of the original proposal by defining certain high-priority, legally complex cases. The Department of Justice will provide review and consultation on all of these cases with settlement and litigation services as needed. The Department of Human Services may refer other cases to the Department of Justice as resources allow. DHS will allow or will add 32 new paralegal support staff and supervisor positions as of January 1, 2006. Existing caseworker staffing levels are unchanged. DOJ will add 10 new positions to be stationed in Portland and Eugene, supplementing existing staff in Portland and Salem. Funding for the DOJ positions will be paid by DHS from the general fund allocation and matching federal funds. An early focus on high-priority cases is expected to increase the time DHS caseworkers spend on casework rather than legal issues, improve the quality of services, and resolve cases more quickly. The agencies have defined the factors they will use to evaluate the effectiveness of the new resources and will report to the 2007 legislature on this issue. The subcommittee recommends approval. And, Madam Chair and colleagues, I would also point out to you that you have a letter in front of you from Attorney General Hardy Myers and Brian Johnston, Interim Director of DHS. The letter is to Representative Richardson in his role as Chairman of the Human Services Committee. The letter is a response to questions, concerns raised by the Juvenile Rights Project. The Juvenile Rights Project is on record as being opposed to the configuration of the package before you. And Representative Richardson may want to address the letter.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair. The Juvenile Rights Project was concerned that we're not adequately providing for the caseworker support that is needed. They supported more of what was proposed during the last session, which was to expand the number of attorneys. I think it was 19 new attorneys for DOJ, and have kind of circuit attorneys that would be traveling and representing caseworkers. If we had done that, the estimate was that the representation of caseworkers would have gone up from 5% of cases to 15%, although DHS had said they really need about 75% representation under that format, which would have ended up costing, we would just keep going higher and higher, and it would have been $50 to $75 million before we could have reached where their goals were. And so rather than do that, the Ways and Means Committees decided not to do that and make DHS and DOJ come back with an alternative plan. The alternative plan, which we have approved in the subcommittee and which is before this full committee today, basically utilizes additional paralegals that will be stationed all across the state, with the addition of with four attorneys and one supervising attorney to help provide oversight, training, and advice to those paralegals, because much of what is done can be handled by a paralegal and doesn't require an attorney, but those attorneys would be available for those cases that need to have an attorney on site. So it's a different approach, utilizing paralegals more than having attorneys doing what paralegals could do.
Further discussion? Senator Schreiner?
Just a follow-up, if I may. I mean, because a lot of people here, I don't know if they have. I'd like the letter part of the record, both letters, actually, if they aren't already, if that's okay with the body. And then I assume that the attorneys will be, based on the letter, both the question and the letter, that the attorneys will be located in areas where most of the cases are. So there's some fairly direct correlation between attorneys and caseload. Is that your understanding, too?
That is correct. There's one additional attorney in Portland, and the remainder are in Eugene, and they make up between 70 and 75% of the caseload from those areas.
And in addition, this configuration gives us 100% coverage of the most critical cases, and that's our goal.
Second question along the same lines. Just to be sure that then when legal advice is given, it will be given by the attorneys, not paralegals. Paralegals will do a lot of the work to help prepare for that, but the legal advice for the 85% improvement that they talked about in their letter will actually be done by the attorneys. And so also correct.
I can answer that. That is correct. The paralegals will be working very closely with the attorneys, obtaining the information, counseling with them, and then implementing as necessary. The legal advice and the responsibility for that advice will be with the attorneys, and they will be on site for those cases where an attorney really needs to be there.
Last minute, question.
Hello.
I'm sorry. I was very interested in performance outcomes. Wonder if that was discussed, because I know that the two outcomes that I understand that would relate to this would be the median number of months from date of removal to final adoption, and percentage of abused and neglected children that are reabused within 6 months, and there are perhaps some legal ones. I was looking at, right now their targets are 34.5 months and 16.1%, respectfully. I would hope that when they come before the legislature, and actually prior to that, would spending this money would be a revised target that will be better than that. I heard some discussion that this will help them get to that target. I'm not in favor of this expenditure unless it's going to improve the target. So what was the general discussion?
Madam Chair, there was no discussion on that specifically yesterday, but in our subcommittee meetings that we had during the session, it did come up, and we've also asked for comparisons as to what is the targets in other states, so that we know what's reasonable and what's not reasonable based on what's happening in other states, because it's all relative. But we certainly want improvement, and that is what this is designed to do, is help improve the time frame, because a lot of cases get delayed over legal issues because caseworkers are having to make decisions that they're not prepared to do. And so part of this approval is to provide legal representation to speed up the process, and especially with those cases that are most litigious or most difficult.
Thank you.
I would just add, Madam Chair, to the good representative's comments that clearly this is a work in progress, and those performance measures need work. In addition, it's important to be aware that this new configuration also requires training. And we made the point in our hearing that while we are moving toward strengthening the overall administration of justice as it relates to child welfare cases, we want to make sure that we're providing adequate training to these paralegals and others who are going to be taking on this new responsibility. So we heard something about the training or core trainings that's made available through a PSU training program, but there's another training component that needs to be added that will again give these paralegals and others the capacity, the skills they need to do this work effectively. But that is something that will need to be followed, monitored, and we need to inquire about that progress at our next meeting.
Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you. I just remember back in our subcommittee in discussion and during session, and there are a few of us here, this came up, and this is a giant step in the right direction. I think that it's going the right way, and I'm really happy to see that when we told them to come back, you know, with something else, and Representative Richardson was chair at the time of that sub, tried very hard to work with them, and we knew we couldn't do it then and told them to come back, and it makes me, I guess, happy with this process that it can happen this way, and I know that it's not the complete picture, but the complete picture as we work toward it, I think, you know, hopefully we'll address Senator Schrader's concerns too. So I'm a definite yes on this.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the key points also in comparing the package that was presented during the session to this package is as the session package included the potential loss of 40 caseworkers to gain the additional legal representation, whereas this package, all caseworker numbers are maintained. And we did have discussion in yesterday's meeting to make certain, because we were told earlier that with legal representation, the caseworkers would have more face time to the customer, to the children and families that they're working with. So I think that's a critical piece of this package that, in my eyes, makes it an improvement to what we saw before.
Discussion. Any objections?
Madam Chair, yes, and I'd like to explain why. Thank you. It's completely unrelated to this particular issue, and I appreciate the good work by all involved. I'm going to be voting no on a number of DHS issues here because I have a constituent issue before DHS that has not been resolved to my satisfaction. In fact, I believe that it is an abuse of power. I intend to file complaints formally against certain DHS workers here. And I appreciate the incoming director spending time with me chatting about this. And I know we'll be working on this together. And I do appreciate the outgoing director also listening to my concerns in this regard. I intend to utilize about the only opportunity that I have to protest the actions of the agency currently, and that is by my no vote. I'm seeking justice for what I think is a true abuse of power for my constituents. No state employee is going to threaten my constituents and get away with it. And that's why I'm voting no.
Further discussion? Other than Representative Krupp, any other objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Item number 11, Department of Human Services, Representative Richardson.
Madam Speaker, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board authorize transfer of general fund appropriations, increase other funds expenditure limitation by $32,578,858, and increase federal funds expenditure limitation by $10,889,770 to close out the 2003-05 biennium budget for the Department of Human Services. DHS's closeout plan reflects the budget changes needed to match up its 2003-05 budget with updated revenue and spending estimates. The legislature last rebalanced the DHS budget during the 2005 session based on estimates submitted in April 2005. This emergency board action is expected to be the final adjustment before the financial books are closed at the end of the year. With these adjustments, DHS expects $22.8 million will revert to the general fund. This amount is about $55 million less than the $77.7 million reversion that was expected last spring. The closeout plan includes $6 million in higher general fund costs due to caseloads and $15.9 million of general fund for a final Medicare upper payment limit, or MUPL, settlement. Most notably, however, about $44 million of general fund is needed to replace lower than expected other funds and federal funds revenues. This reflects corrections from empty expenditure limitation not backed by actual revenue, and the impact of the cost allocations and time reporting changes that were adopted with the agency's reorganization, as well as normal revenue fluctuations. The 2005 legislature was concerned during the session with DHS's revenue forecasts, budget, and accounting procedures. It directed DHS to review and report to the Emergency Board on these issues with its first 2005-07 biennial budget rebalance. This is expected in January of 2006. The subcommittee notes that many of the added general fund costs in this 2003-05 closeout plan, particularly the caseload and revenue issues, will need to be addressed for the 2005-07 budget as well. Now, this board needs to be very watchful and careful regarding the forecasts and the revenue flow between now and the January e-board. And we also need to work with DHS in these upcoming months to assure that there are more accurate forecasts and better revenue tracking. And with that, the subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an issue that in my legislative career, this body has dealt with more than one time. And I think that we have expressed our indignation and our shame at having to deal with these things more than one time. And I can remember myself making the speech before this body in previous rebalance situations and closeout situations. There is a huge deficiency here, and I think it's in two main areas. The first area that we have been blindsided on more than one occasion has to do with the caseload projections that the agency gives the legislature to work with and that we use to make fiscal decisions about the agency. I think that clearly it's time to take a look at whether that function should be in that department at all or whether it should be moved somewhere else where there can be a more arm's-length relationship to the data and to the question at hand. I think that the other clear dysfunction or in the agency has to do with the way that the whole business side of the agency is organized, that there are clear deficiencies in the way the bookkeeping system is wired together and in the way things are tracked and reported. And there have been numerous discussions about the frustration of people in the Ways and Means process in the legislature and also with the people that provide us with information being unable to follow the way that the department does things. And I think that it is time that we take a look at these issues. Clearly, the accounting function and the business function has to be elevated within DHS so that it has equal importance with the service delivery side of the operation, because we can't run the business of state government without better data from the department. It simply has too big of an impact on the state's budget as a whole. And being whipsawed the way that we've been whipsawed is just plain not acceptable. I really applaud Representative Richardson and the rest of the committee in the discussions that have been had here. And I do hope that over the interim, with the committees that will be in place, that these will be issues that will be brought forward, because I think clearly this is something that just has got to stop.
And just to follow up on that, we are appointing an interim committee, a House interim committee on DHS overview that Representative Richardson will be the chair of. We have another committee that's going to be delving into the Oregon Health Plan, and then another committee that's going to look at child welfare. So we hope to have a comprehensive look at kind of how the operation works and where it needs correction. And Dr. Goldberg, we want to work with you. And I know you're stepping into an extraordinary position and extraordinary time, and we want the relationship to be amenable, and we want to work with you and not against you. So let's hope work together and see if we can correct what has been a long-term ongoing problem with this agency. Further discussion? Senator Schrader?
Just to echo, so that one doesn't think this is a House issue alone, the Senate feels much the same as the concerns been expressed by the Chair and Representative Morgan. This has been a long issue. The fact that the Legislative Fiscal Office has worked with this department on other funds tracking, and here we have another funds tracking issue. They've done this for the last three sessions at least. That's inexcusable. The fact that there's a change in administrative allocation a couple of years ago that only now they're figuring out that they, you know, have to refigure how that's supposed to be apportioned amongst the state and federal funds, that's inexcusable. And I guess the question I'd have for the agency is, who's going to lose their job over this? This is a management issue. This is not something about the poor caseworkers who are working 24/7 trying to do the right thing. This is a management issue. I'm not talking about Bobby Mink or Brian or these people. I'm talking about the people that are supposed to be in charge of these accounting functions. And people, you're not going to have any account, but we can do all sorts of task forces. We can pass, you know, this great, you know, external investigation or whatever. The real bottom line is someone's got to lose their job. They're not doing the job. And this culture will perpetuate itself unless we show, I think, some serious response to this, that this is over. This is done. Otherwise, we will be back here giving the same speeches 2 years, 4 years, 6 years from now. So I think this is totally inappropriate. I'm going to be voting no on this. Again, Representative Krupp doesn't have the market on just symbolic gestures here. So I think this is totally inappropriate, and I'm very, very upset. I would ask staff one question, though, about, you know, I'm very concerned about the roll-up of this. You know, we're only talking about the 03-05 biennium, and that's, you know, $55 million. Geez, what does that mean for, you know, a whole biennium that we're now about to get into? What is the range of potential costs we may be on the hook for, if there's any rough calculation along those lines?
Madam Chair and Senator Schrader, we don't know yet, and we are concerned about it. We've had some preliminary discussions with some of the staff at the Department of Human Services, but they have not completed their work for the January rebalance. That's going to be happening over the next couple of months, but it could be significant. And we tried to give all of you a heads up in our analysis to signal and to let you know that we could be facing some significant problems in January over this rebalance.
Not to be too persistent, but is significant less than $55 million or probably more than $55
million? Madam Chair and Senator Schrader, I don't know.
He should run for office, you know. I think
fair enough. What would, just to follow, what would happen if these dollars were not allocated at this point? What would happen?
Madam Chair, the legislature already appropriated, you're asking with respect to the 0305 budget, the legislature already appropriated the $77 million, and that is what's covering this additional cost. They will revert, instead of $77 million, only $22 million. So that's taken care of in the sense that the money has already been appropriated. With respect to the other funds limitation and the federal funds limitation, we'd have a big problem, I guess, because they need that limitation in order to balance their budget.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm. Representative Richardson?
I might state that this is really points to the importance of the next e-board, the January 06, because what happened in last session is DHS came in the last quarter of a biennium and says, oh, by the way, we're $77.7 million short, which means you can either shut down the agency or come up with the money. And so we loaned them the money and expected to get it paid back, and now they're $55 million short. If we can get accurate information in January, we'll have 18 months left in the biennium that we can actually make some adjustments and spread it over that kind of time and not wait till the last quarter when you can't do anything.
Madam Chair, and the big question mark that was that Representative Richardson raised, if we can get accurate data. You know, it is the if we can get accurate data that has created every time we come here to discuss the needs, financial needs of this agency. It's not something that happened last session. This has been going on now for several sessions, and I think that the hard look at its financial structure, and I would concur with some of the comments that Representative Morgan made, that looking at it from their fiscal structure, and you can't just talk about it at the administrative level, but because you have to get all the way down into the field and how their whole data is processed and how it's fed through. And I think that should be the number one priority of this agency and of this body, because until we get our arms around the baseline data and what the actual true cost, programmatic costs are, and those funding streams, we're going to be back here 6 months from now, a year from now, having the same discussion. It's one that I hope that we need to. We can't continue when you start talking about rebalance. One of the reasons for rebalance was to have the legislative body to stay on top of and to allow them to shift funding. When they had caseload decline in one area and an increase in the other, give them that kind of flexibility. And we have found that too has not worked. So I think it's time for this body to really take some real hard looks and to assist the director, because we've had five directors for this agency. I mean, think about it. We've had five different directions, and I just think that we have to be proactive and working with trying to help resolve this issue within the department.
Senator Morse?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be helpful to reframe this issue in a different perspective. In a way, the analogy, I think, is pretty accurate. If we were the lending committee of a commercial bank and DHS was our customer, with these continuing problems that have existed, what would we do? And that's not necessarily a rhetorical.
We could take and take her off.
No, we wouldn't. Well, that's not a solution. No, we obviously can't do that. We're wed to this institution. So how do we solve the problem? That's the question. In the same way that a commercial bank would look at this enterprise, and there are people out there, and in a collaborative way, not in a heavy hammer way, but a collaborative way, that we could initiate to come in and help the executive branch right this ship, that are highly qualified. You know, they call them turnaround specialists or consultants. There are people that understand processes and procedures, wade into it, and help correct these problems, because they're systemic and they're perpetual. And when we sit here, you know, and just wring our hands, I don't think we're discharging our function either. So, frame the issue. We're the lenders. We're the commercial bankers. We're the lending committee. What would we do?
Thank you, Senator. Senator Burton.
So everybody knows I'm worried about symbolic gestures. I don't quite know what that signal means in terms of how many symbolic gestures are about to take place. I want to point out that yesterday the Senate confirmed Bruce Goldberg as the new director. His nomination was carried on the floor by the good vice chair of rules, Senator Ted Ferrioli. Every member of the Senate that was there yesterday voted for him, and the record was noted on the Senate floor about this particular issue. We're making a record here today. A couple times I've spoken with the then-designated new director, once in my office and on the phone. This is the kind of thing we talk about extensively. And I pointed out the need for him to make two great hires. Unfortunately, one of the great hires he tried to make is to take away one of our great, great legislative fiscal people. He didn't succeed. It tells me that he is on the right course. And what I'm saying is he's in the back of the room. I just hope that there aren't so many symbolic votes or gestures today that we hamstring him before he can even get started. And I think that the magnitude of this problem, it's being put on the record here. It was put on the record on the Senate floor yesterday. But I think the beginning is now, and the beginning is this new director, and to get behind him. I'm sure he'll be back before us in January. He'll be back for every e-board, because that's this agency comes before the e-board, the short-term e-board, more than any other agency. So a welcome symbolic votes today. I just hope there aren't so many that we vote this thing down and start him out in a more difficult position than he already is in. So I feel very strongly about that, And I just hope that we're aware that he needs that support that we've talked about on the Senate floor and so on and so forth about here today. And with that, Madam Speaker, I complete my statement.
Representative Craig Smith.
thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Welcome, Mr. Goldberg. Congratulations on your new assignment. Following up on Senator Morris's comment, it doesn't matter if you're a little mom-and-pop grocery store or Intel. This agency is too big, too complex, and the way to solve issues is to break them down to the simplest component. And at some point, if you really want to get your arms around the Department of Human Services, you need to break it down, and you need to break it into simpler components. It's not going to occur today. Probably won't occur in my lifetime here. But at some point, what we need to do from a management position is take the department and break it down into simpler, more manageable components so you can figure out what each division within the department is doing. You can bring it back together at some point, but until you break it down, you'll never get your arms around it.
Thank you, Representative Weston.
Just a response to President Courtney's very articulate expression of support for this agency. I just want you to know, sir, that I am absolutely a symbolic yes on this budget.
What does that mean?
Symbolic in more ways than one, sir.
Further discussion? Since we had a few objections, we have the properly called roll, please.
Senator Schrader?
No.
Senator Wessel?
Aye.
Senator Gorger?
Aye.
Senator Winter?
Aye.
Senator Devlin?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Co-Chair Courtney?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Representative Richard?
Yes.
Representative Hannah?
Yes.
Representative Boone?
Yes.
Representative Barber?
Yes.
Representative Cup?
No.
Chair Minnis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Item number 12, Senator Gordley, Human Services.
Thank you. The Human Services Subcommittee, Madam Chair, recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on a capital construction project at the Oregon State Hospital's Portland facility and direct the Department of Human Services to report to the Emergency Board in January with more information. The Department of Human Services reports that it is analyzing a capital construction project at the Oregon State Hospital's Portland facility. This building, which the department leases from the Legacy Health System, currently houses about 68 patients on floors with psychiatric treatment spaces. The sixth floor of the building, however, is a medical unit that was never converted to psychiatric space. At the same time, an OSH Master Plan Phase 1 report indicates that several buildings on the Oregon State Hospital campus in Salem are at risk in the event of an earthquake. Most notable among them is the 122-year-old J Building complex, which houses about 100 forensics patients. The Department of Human Services is concerned about the safety of the patients in the J Building, given the seismic risk, and believes that about 30 patients could be moved to the sixth floor of the Legacy Building in Portland if that floor were remodeled. Preliminary estimates for the remodeling project range from $525,000 to $950,000 general fund. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of the report. Further, we recommend that DHS submit another e-board report in January that would discuss the items listed in the LFO analysis, as well as several other issues mentioned by subcommittee members. And these issues include the timeline for placing the other 70 patients who now reside in the J Building, how the Legacy Expansion Project is consistent with the Master Plan for Oregon State Hospital and Mental Health System, And lastly, Oregon State Hospital patient and staff safety with a focus on appropriate staffing levels and workers' compensation costs. Madam Chair, the subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Representative Richardson?
Madam Chair, this is an issue that needs to be ventilated somewhat because for two reasons. One, Senator Courtney and Representative Menes, Speaker Menes, you were misrepresented. The truth was misrepresented to you in the letter from the interim director. And any time an agency tells you something that's untrue, there needs to be accountability for that. We received a letter from the interim director on October 3rd that says the sixth floor of the Oregon State Hospital lease facility in Portland will be changed from medical treatment space to psychiatric space. Later on, it says the sixth floor is about 18,000 square feet in area and is a medical unit that was never converted to psychiatric space. So in our discussions yesterday, our committee is concerned about if you have 18,000 square feet that's in a medical unit and you're going to change it to psychiatric space, what's going to happen to all of those patients that are no longer going to have that facility? And so we asked, what is going to happen to the patients in this medical facility? What is it currently being used as? And we're told, well, it's not being used for anything. You got 18,000 square feet, an entire floor that is not being used for anything. How long has it been empty? Well, the lease began in 1995 and has recently been extended for another 10 years. So we asked, what is the cost on that footage? $1.50 a square foot. And so what we have in DHS is an entire floor that we've been paying rent on, $27,000 a month, that has remained empty for 10 years. And the excuse was, well, in negotiations, you got to kind of take some extra space sometimes when you have to. And that didn't fly, because if that were the case, then why wasn't it sublet? Or why wasn't it used for other DHS programs? Why was it used by other government agencies? But no, it stayed empty for 10 years. And that was not mentioned here. And it was an embarrassment to leadership at DHS because they weren't aware of it. But someone who prepared this information did not disclose accurate information. We're talking about $324,000 a year, $3.24 million over 10 years, assuming it was at $1.50 the entire time, of empty, wasted space. What could we have done with that additional money? And, of course, the next question is, how many other spaces are in DHS organization that are dormant, that are unrented, that are just sitting there that we're paying rent on? And I was told last night that as soon as the subcommittee ended, Vic Todd went back and asked for all the leases to be brought forward. So he was at least taking action on that very embarrassing disclosure to him and to the other leaders of DHS that we would have an entire floor, one-fourth of the space that DHS rented in that building has set empty for 10 years.
This is a surprise. Representative Hannah and Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The finding of this yesterday, along with facility management issues that came about during the session with other space and how it was being used and the cost of that space, in my mind, brings about questions of who is managing that and to what degree they are experts in managing commercial space. So some study of facilities management getting down to the individual leased spaces seems necessary. When you come across an issue like this and others that have been brought forth, it just seems completely unreasonable that you would have that hidden away and that it would be represented as space that was used when, in fact, it was not, except, as was noted yesterday, for the occasional meeting. And that was the comment that was brought forth. This is a tough one and an embarrassment to the state.
Ken, does the department lease, or do they manage those properties themselves, or is that done through FAS, or how is that managed? You know?
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure on this particular lease, but usually it's done a combination of the agency and the DAS facilities people. But we can find out more about this if you're interested.
Thank you.
I was just going to make a similar comment that was raised by Representative Hannah, and it's not only just the Department of Human Services, but of all the facilities, and if you have this vacant space that is not being used, that can be sublet or whatever, that should be an aggressive program inside the state. And as I understand it, most of the facilities activity occurs through DAS or in combination thereof, and perhaps we need to look at all vacant space, not just what's in the Department of Human Services, but where there's vacant space that exists that could be yielding revenue through subletting or other means. So it's I share the concern, and I share that there is a bigger picture just beyond the department, that if we're going to look, we need to look at all the agencies.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a pervasive problem in state government. I'm aware of a Department of Employment issue that is very similar with a building downtown here. I would agree and concur with what the two previous speakers have said. I think that we need an audit. The audits committee should conduct an audit during the interim of all state leases, and we should demand that DAS visually verify that these spaces are being used for what they're being leased for. Ronald Reagan had a great dictum when he dealing with the Soviet Union. It was called trust but verify. And I think we need to do some verification here, and it's getting harder and harder to trust the information that we're hearing from this agency.
Further discussion? Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is amazing to me, some of this information, and as you know, I wasn't here yesterday. I was out of state. But there seems to be a recurring theme about the management process, and this may be, and I've heard from state employees who on a different level, but they're saying that managers lack education, they lack the training, and they're just being moved up as people retire, and it's kind of automatic steps, and you have people who aren't prepared to do the job we're asking them to do, and that needs to be stopped. And I'd have some great concerns if departments could just trade among themselves without us really knowing who's doing what. I mean, I don't want to approve a DHS budget and find out that it's going to DMV or DEQ or somebody else. I mean, we need to know where those are. So we do really need to do some checking on these things. Thank you.
Senator Gordy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let us also keep in front of us with an even greater sense of urgency that we have 100 patients that we've got to get out of that state hospital, and we've got to do that now. We have patients, I emphasize these are patients, living in conditions that are unsafe. The buildings are unsafe. The conditions around staffing, the staff-to-patient ratio is such that the staff and the patients are in unsafe conditions. Now, that's critical. And we are not moving fast enough. We still don't have a sense of how moving these patients, when we do accomplish that, is going to tie into the overall master plan for the Oregon State Hospital. Again, I don't want us to lose a sense of momentum and urgency around this particular issue. We are not serving these patients well at this juncture, and that is shameful. It continues to be shameful. It's happening on our watch. And we are also liable. We are liable to being sued. So let's communicate again. I know the good Dr. Goldberg heard a sense of urgency from the subcommittee on yesterday. But again, we have patients who, as we sit here now, are sitting over there now waiting for us to act.
very quickly.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Courtney.
Yes, I'd like to join the remarks, I think, of the Senator Richardson and Senator Gordy. Senator Gordy said what I was thinking. Right. Can I ask, is it my understanding, Senator Gordy, in your report that you talked about the 30, I'm very concerned about the 30, but also the 70. They're going to. When is the report coming back about the remaining 70, please, Senator Gordy?
January.
Yes. All right. Now, Senator Richardson, I'm confused. Is your testimony here today that space is being rented that could alleviate the crisis for some of the 70 or all the 70? Is that also? I understand the situation that reportedly we're renting space and we're not using it. But is it also part of your testimony then, or can I infer that part of the space we're renting could be used to take to deal with some of the 70? Or do you know?
Absolutely. There's two aspects. One is what happened over the past 10 years, and the other is what is going to happen in the future. Item 12 deals with going forward with some architectural and engineering study or information as to the possibility and the desirability of remodeling that empty space so that it can handle forensic patients or patients from the state hospital. That is what item 12 is, and we support moving ahead with that, with the understanding that in January they also come in with an idea about the master plan and whether or not it's appropriate to spend between $700,000 and $950,000 to remodel somebody else's building as compared to having it be phase one or some portion of the master plan. But we don't want to just jump ahead with this. But we need to approve this so that we can take steps to help provide for the patients that are in the state hospital. But we shouldn't forget a secondary issue as to what has taken place in the past 10 years.
Just for the record, as you know, the Speaker and I, as well as others, have been heavily involved in this issue for well over a year, even before last session. In fact, it started in the summer, I believe, of the last e-board, almost a year ago, or last fall, I believe, in Baltimore. I think there's the perception among some that everybody knows we're looking at the state hospital, we're going to have to replace it, as well as our whole approach. There may be the perception that at the time we replace it, that's how we're going to resolve some or all of these individuals in the J building. That is simply untrue. Because we are on notice now because of the task force report has come down or the architect report has come down. The conditions are so horrific out there, and it does not just involve seismic issues. The issues are so horrific that if something were to happen, even as we speak now, the liability, in my opinion, of those of us in key positions would be tremendous. It is that bad out there. No state prison has any of the conditions even close. Not that, and I only say that for the person, as we have allowed to have at the Oregon, particularly at the J building. It is that bad. And so Senator Gordley has spoken to us. The urgency here is monumental. So we do not even begin to have the luxury of. We have another report, I believe, coming in February, the second part of the plan to move us down the path about building a new facility or where it's going to be or what it's going to look like. That's all fine. We're at flank speed on that. But the fact is, those 100 in the J building, just say J building, that we got to do something. I mean, we are in a crisis mode. I hope everybody understands that. In my opinion, but I think it's also been documented. And so I do thank the subcommittee, and I'm particularly thankful because I was going to ask the question you anticipated, what about the remaining ones? And we're going to get a report in January, so we continue to try to find ways to deal with this. And in no way am I trying to take away from the allegations here that we're renting substantial space and have been for 10 years, and we haven't been using it. So that's another whole issue that's on our plate regarding this thing.
Further discussion, Representative Breaksman.
No, I just think Oregonians deserve a lot better than this.
Further discussion? Any objections? Representative Krupp, any other objections? So ordered. Item number 13.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the submission of the Federal Centers for Disease Control National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health Grant application in the amount of up to $275,000 to determine the feasibility of conducting an epidemiological assessment. Interest in this grant came about because the plumbers, steam fitters, and marine fitters Local Union 290 approached Oregon's Occupational Safety and Health Division staff to request assistance in evaluating concerns about member disability and premature death. Staff determined the union's questions could not adequately be addressed by Oregon's OSHA and initiated discussions with DHS's public health program management. The union, DCBS, and DHS agreed that DHS should pursue the grant because DHS staff have expertise in both grant writing and epidemiological research. The application could request up to $275,000 over a two-year period to determine the feasibility of conducting a more extensive epidemiological assessment of illnesses, disability, and premature death among union members who perform work such as welding, soldering, and pipe fitting. The grant is due January 6, 2006, and does not require state matching funds. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the Department's request to apply for the federal grant.
Discussion. Any objection?
Madam Speaker, I object, but also for the reason, the aforementioned reasons, but also I applaud the direction this is going, but I don't think it goes far enough. I wish that they had included in the study people like me who weld on a regular basis who are non-union, because if there are dangers that we're facing from that, we ought to be included in that also.
Further discussion? With one objection? Seeing no other objections? Motion carries. Item number 14, Department of Human Services, Senator Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on implementing the Medicare Modernization Act. Various members of the 2005 Legislative Assembly asked the Department of Human Services to report to the Emergency Board on a regular basis about implementing the Medicare Modernization Act. The most important provision of the Medicaid Modernization Act is the prescription drug benefit that it adds to the Medicare program, Medicare Part D, beginning January 1, 2006. DHS reports that it has made significant progress in preparing for the new Medicare Part D benefit. The department has met all federal deadlines for submission of data and state Medicaid plan amendments, including the establishment of a procedure to adjudicate eligibility for the Medicare Part D low-income subsidy. The department has trained over 2,500 staff providers and other stakeholders to help inform the public about the Medicare Modernization Act and assist persons in their selection of a Medicare Modernization drug plan. In particular, DHS has focused attention on assisting the estimated 54,000 dual-eligible clients, persons who are both eligible for Medicare and Medicaid, in their transition from using the Medicaid prescription drug benefits to Medicare Part D. Other piece, I know that there's some legislators who are hosting town halls in their community as to further to help inform their constituents. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the E-Board acknowledge receipt of the report.
Discussion. Objection? Any other? The word. Item 15, Representative Richardson, Insurance Governing Board.
Co-Chair, the House Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on negotiations with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, concerning the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, FEHOP, their maintenance of effort requirements, and allocate $2,910,293 from the special purpose appropriation to the Emergency Board to the Insurance Pool Governing Board for FEHOP. The 2005 Legislative Assembly established a $4 million special purpose appropriation, SPA, that could be allocated to either the IPGB, the Insurance Pool Governing Board, or to DHS, depending upon negotiations with CMS concerning the FEHOP maintenance of effort requirement. The legislature wanted the executive branch to investigate with CMS whether all or part of the $4 million SPA could be used to fund the Oregon Health Plan standard or Children's health insurance program CHIP enhancements, but still be counted as meeting the FEOP maintenance of effort requirement, or I could say MOE. So we got, I won't go through these acronyms. DHS and IPGB representatives reported that talks with CMS had begun, but that CMS could not yet provide a response. The executive branch requested that the emergency board acknowledge receipt of the report, but delay allocation of the SPA until January, when CMS may have a response. LFO, however, recommends that the emergency board allocate $2.9 million of the SPA to IPGB. Well, LFO made this recommendation in order to hedge our overall program and financial risk if CMS denies or delays our request, and also to maintain FEOP program's credibility. This is, I won't use
to
the military
support
kind
representative
of...
representative, it's full of acronyms.
Did it, but we understand. The subcommittee discussed this recommendation at length, and although we support efforts to provide health insurance to more children, we agreed with LFO's recommendation. This recommendation allows FEOP to fund eligible persons from whom applications have already been received, as well as providing two additional weeks until November 15th to those who have received applications but not yet responded to do so. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of the report and allocate $2.9 million of the SPA to the Insurance Pool Governing Board. In addition, CMS has indicated Oregon needs to provide a specific proposal for its waiver request. And what happened was the DHS gave a waiver request without four alternatives and asked CMS which one looked most attractive to them that might allow this $4 million or some part of it to not be used for FEOP's maintenance of effort, but to be transferred for other uses like CHIP or standard population. Well, CMS came back and said, we're not going to be it's not our job to tell you which of these looks the most attractive. Come to us with a recommendation, a specific recommendation, and then we will consider that. And so after considering how this should be dealt with, since the initial CMS waiver request with its four options was crafted by DHS and the governor's office, any refinements in that application would also be appropriate to be under their purview. And so if there needs to be one recommendation, then DHS and the governor ought to decide which of the four that they crafted would be that recommendation. It's really not something the legislature needs to make a decision on.
Okay, further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Chairman, Chairwoman Minnis. Chairperson, yes.
Chair.
Whatever. Karen. I will be a no on this, and for several reasons, but I just wanted to point them out just briefly. I think it's a more efficient use of the money to cover more people with this amount, which would be more kids would be covered. It's our only chance to cover kids at this point. I think we should wait for an answer. And I guess my core reason for voting no is I have a philosophical objection to taking money that's specifically designed for one population and moving it to another. So for that reason, I'll be a no. And we did up the amount. We gave them I think it was $7 million last session. And I had a bill, it didn't go through, but to expand FEOP in a different way. And so it's not that I do like the program, but I just think it's a more efficient use of the money at this point and that we should wait for the answers. Thank you.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm going to also be a no vote on this. I missed the discussion yesterday, and I may have learned something that would cause me to vote yes, but I did get home to find my phone mailbox full for after my trip, and I made some callbacks, and people who called me were very concerned about this, and they said that by waiting until January, nobody currently under the FEOP would lose any insurance. But by waiting, and if we could do that, we could possibly have five times as many, 9,600 kids, with health insurance. And while now it's only 1,900. So for that reason, I'm going to vote no.
Representative Richardson, would you like to respond?
I certainly would. I wish that you could have been there yesterday because it was a very detailed and important discussion because it's a balance. Here we've told FEOP in the session, we want you to go forward and actively market these policies. And they've done that, and they've done it more successfully than we ever expected. And so now we're at a point where the recommendation from the governor's office was that we ought to just stop any applications that are in process, and there may even be a disenrollment of people that are already in. And as we discussed it, we realized that, well, that could be done, and certainly that would help children if we shifted the money there. But what about the credibility that this body has in creating the plan and saying go out and market it? And so what FEOP has done is take our directives, they've gone to agents all across the state, and they said, we want you to help sell these products to groups and to individuals who need insurance, that and the state will help subsidize it on a means-based issue so that as they make more money, they can pay more of their premiums until hopefully they could be independent. And they've done that, and now we're going to say, go back to the people and to the agents and say, we're going to stop this, and even though you presented it and your credibility's on the line, you've got premiums that that will pay you commissions, we want you to just say, no, we're not going to accept those applications that are pending, and there may even be a disenrollment of people that are already enrolled. And so what this was, what's taking place here, is LFO has said that it affects credibility and it's a breach of our recommendations and assignment to FEOP and to these people that have been involved in this process. And so why don't we say, if it's in the works, we're going to honor it. But as of November 15th, we're going to take a breather from that point for at least 90 days or for who knows how long to let things settle. And so any applications that are in the mix, that are in process, can still come in as long as they come in by November 15th. But that'll be the cutoff date. And that way we honor the program that we've promoted and we support FEOP, who we've told to go out and market this, and we don't pull the rug out from under agents and individuals that have been promised that you know they could, if they market it, they will be paid, and if they apply, they will have coverage. And so, you know, assuming that they qualify. So anyway, this was kind of a balanced compromise on how to do it and still retain the integrity of the organization and the legislature in the eyes of the people, because we're the ones that told FEOP to go out and market this. So instead of cutting it off now, as was recommended, we're saying it'll be stopped as of November 15th, and we'll have a breather period from that point on. But those things that are in process, we will honor. So that's really why we're recommending this way. And it also leaves $1.1 million of retained money that if the maintenance of effort request, waiver request is honored, then that $1.1 million can be used for these other programs. You know, but if not, and if we accepted the original recommendation, we'd be holding everything off until January at least. CMS has no history of being on time, plus they've got Katrina issues to deal with. But assuming that they did come back and they said, no, we're not going to have the precedent of changing midstream, which would be applied to the other 49 states, then FEOP would be going back to the very same people, these brokers, and saying, although we shut this down in October, we now want to ramp it up again and have you go out and make sure that we make our maintenance of effort requirement in a lesser amount of time. So anyway, it was a tough decision, and that's why we came up with the recommendation and approval for the recommendation.
Further discussion?
Just for the benefit of those, I, in my opinion, the inferences of some of the letters that we've received from some well-meaning individuals are inaccurate and misrepresent that we're taking money from CHIP and giving it to FEOP. That is not actually the case. We've been trying to get, we've had the FEOP program for a number of sessions, and we've tried to get federal match for that. And the federal government has finally stepped up and done it. They have chosen this source of money that we're not using to give the match. So it's not like we're taking money away from one group and giving it to another. There's a program that we've been able, it was a general fund only program for a number of biennia, and now we're actually getting the federal government to step up and put some bucks in the program and really getting a two for one on this. This is a waiver we asked for. Of course, the federal government return says, well, geez, you got to at least maintain that effort then, you know, if we're going to match you guys. So I think that the discussion that the committee and I think that the legislature in Ways and Means had last session is that, well, yeah, we certainly want to show the federal government that we're going to come up with a creative program to get the working poor health care coverage that they don't have right now, that we're going to stay the course. And so the inference that you've received and I've received that this is somehow some bait and switch, I think is quite frankly, in my opinion, a little fallacious and a little misrepresentable. So I think this is a very good program. We've done some great work, and I think it'd be behoove us not to lose or threaten our entire waiver process by trying to back out on this.
Further discussion, Senator Westland? We have Westland, Boone, Senator Winters, and Senator Kaplan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very concerned about the implications of this request for several reasons. First of all, just a very few short months ago, the 73rd Legislative Assembly made a difficult policy decision. This $4 million did not get into the E-Fund as a special purpose appropriation by magic. We vetted this issue and made a difficult policy decision to shift all too scarce general fund dollars from deserving low-income working poor to even lower-income, more deserving, extremely poor individuals and children. That's what this money was shifted for. It was put as a placeholder in the emergency fund with the express directions to DHS to go to CMS and make application. Regardless of the herky-jerky nature of this request, we put forth four and they come back and say, no, give us one. The intent still remains. That the policy decision was made in the 73rd Legislative Assembly to make this application and see what happens and hold the money. Now, I fully acknowledge that whether we're talking about 1.1 reserved or 2.9 or $4 million going to FEOP or $4 million going to CHIP, it is in reality a de minimis amount of money in the overall scale of the health plan and in the overall scope of how we underfund health care in this state. Secondly, and this is a declarative question, we already have a waiver request into CMS. It's there. The process is working and in place. And I guess the declarative question is what kind of message does this send to CMS about our decision-making process? And just as importantly, how does it affect their decision-making process? I mean, colleagues, as I indicated, I have concerns about this. I understand the arguments on both sides. They are both valid. FEOP, CHIP, standard population, all very, very, very deserving populations. But we made the decision. Why don't we stick with it? Thank you, Madam.
Senator, Representative Boone.
Well, I'm sorry I wasn't able to hear what happened in the committee, and I appreciate your comments, Senator Richardson, as the case may be, and everybody else's. And it's confusing when you do the one thing in the session, and then it gets changed, and you get information from all sides, and it is or is it not? It is CHIP money being transferred or is not? Who's the... Is it Mr. Britton?
Mr. Britton, could you answer
that? Madam Chair and Representative Boone, the special purpose appropriation, and I'll give you my understanding of it, was the directive to DHS was to explore the possibility of making an allocation of all or part of that $4 million special purpose appropriation to the CHIP program, or if it turned out that CMS did not go along with the maintenance of effort request, that it be allocated to FEOP. So the directive was to explore the possibility of using it in a different way other than within FEOP.
Senator Winters?
Want to follow up on a question, because there was some discussion about the precedent that this would set, the reason that CMS would be hesitant to go down this path to approve our waiver request to turn it to CHIP, and that has to do where the funding stream actually comes from, or the basis for the waiver, as I understand it, which is not CHIP, but through the HIPAA stream. And if that, and you may want to, if you can comment on that, Lynn Reed discussed that in her testimony as some of the thought that's going on in Region 10, that they did not want to go there. That was the precedent. The reason they didn't want to go there, because then other states then might look at that. And I don't know if you if that's how you heard it, but I heard that that's the one piece there that's sitting there is where the dollars actually are matched from and to on the federal level. The other discussion that we had, and I asked the question of a profile of the individuals to be so that I understood that there were children also involved with FEOP. And a part of it, children are involved in FEOP. And the other piece that was explained to us, a large percentage of the FEOP is women, and women with very severe medical needs. And I think we, in vetting all this yesterday, we took all of those into consideration as well as the issue that this body had encouraged the agency to go out and to be aggressive. And in fact, they went out and they were more aggressive than I think that what we had planned for them to do. And I think my comment was that it does become an integrity issue. It becomes an issue where this body directs agencies to take particular action. And then when they perform what we have asked them to do, do we then say, well, you did what we told you to do. You went out, you enrolled individuals, and now those individuals that you have enrolled, you go back and tell them, sorry, Charlie, but this body has changed its mind. And so that was some of the discussions that we had, and whether or not we, too, are going to be to hold fast to what we have directed agencies, and not just this one, but other agencies, when we direct them to do something and they come back and do it, and then we say to them, but sorry, we've changed our mind, we've had other policy discussions. I do think it's an integrity issue, and there's no one on this panel that's more supportive than expanding the service for children than I am. But I also think that we have to be as honorable as we ask the agencies to be honorable.
Other discussion? Senator Devlin, and then Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not as probably aware of all the details of this as many of the people that are here, and I understand the dilemma that the subcommittee faced, and I understand the different perceptions of what was planned in terms of this allocation, and the perceptions about when a decision should be made. It seems extremely complex to me from a standpoint that if you don't have the waiver now and you wait for the waiver, you might even have more people signed up for FEOP unless you cut it off, and there may not even be the 1.1 million. But if you ask me the fundamental question, which is, I think, the more fundamental question, and that's the question from last session, if you can cover more people under FEOP or you can cover more children, a very difficult choice, and I understand that how difficult that choice is. If I had to face that choice, I'd probably cover more children than I'd cover under FEOP. I think the reality of all this is, in this 40,000-foot view, we have to stop deluding ourselves that we can somehow cover all the uninsured in Oregon with our current resource base that we have to do that and with our current practices. And it's time that we step up and start making some really hard choices about who can be covered and who should. Who we cannot afford to cover. We make those same hard choices in education, and we make those same hard choices in public safety. And we should be willing to make those same hard choices here. And if I had to make that hard choice, I would still side with covering more children than I would under covering more low-income Oregonians. I think they're both very deserving. But I'm one of these people that if the boat is sinking, the children are the first one on the lifeboat. So.
Further discussion, Senator Carter.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For Mr. Britton, in a very well-written analysis that you prepared for our subcommittee, you set forth three reasons for the recommendation that you shared. Would you summarize that recommendation at this juncture in our discussion? It would be helpful for me to again hear that aloud. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I think Representative Richardson kind of outlined those concerns and the basis for my recommendation. The first is that we need to hedge our risk, in my view. that if CMS does not approve this waiver request or delays it, Mr. King of the IPGB has said that if we don't allocate money, the program for FEOP, at least on the individual side, would shut down. But the applications that they had already received in-house, filled out by persons who were interested in the FEOP program, would not be adjudicated. They'd be just stay there. They wouldn't be declared eligible or anything else. Moreover, the people that had received applications and not returned them yet also would be out of luck. And then, again, if CMS delays their response or says no to us, then the money would most certainly have to be allocated to FEOP, and we would be trying to ramp that program back up after having closed it. Now, under the recommendation that we made to the subcommittee, we would have a situation where we would close the program as of November 15th. We would honor those applications that had been submitted already. We would honor applications that had been sent out to the public who were interested in the FEOP program. We would adjudicate those, declare them eligible if they were, and they would be invited to enroll in an individual policy and receive subsidy payments from FEOP. However, there would still be one. To do that would require $2.9 million. There would still be $1.1 million. If CMS denied the request at that point, the $1.1 would have to be allocated to FEOP. And yes, Rocky King would have to ramp the program back up. But at least you'd have $1.1 to spend for maintenance of effort rather than all $4 million. So the first argument, and I belabored it, is a hedge against financial risk. The second one, which I think Representative Richardson talked about, was program credibility. The folks that have already sent in applications are expecting that they receive adjudication on that, be declared eligible or not eligible, and under this proposal to wait, Mr. King, as I said earlier, would have to just ignore those applications. Finally, the third justification for this recommendation has to do with the fact that none of the four policies has really been discussed, at least not within the legislature. When we created this special purpose appropriation, we simply mentioned that the money might go to OHP standard or it might go to enhance the CHIP program. The four alternatives that were submitted to CMS in the executive branch's letter are all, according to Ms. Reed, who provided testimony yesterday, good policy choices from the perspective of CMS. One, as Senator Winters mentioned, relates to a HIFA waiver, and that was the one from increasing the eligibility for CHIP up from 185% of the federal poverty level up to 200% of the federal poverty level. According to the analysis provided by DHS, that would cost $500,000. The option that would increase the caseload so significantly was a different option, and it would cost $3.7 million if it were implemented the entire second year of the biennium, and that was to go from 6 months of eligibility to 12 months of eligibility. But when CMS was asked which one would you be inclined to support as meeting a maintenance of effort requirement for FEOP, they responded that it was the moving from 185 to 200% was the most likely. They didn't say the others weren't a possibility. They just simply said, according to Ms. Reed, that that was the most likely one. So, hedging financial risk, credibility, and a fuller discussion of those policy choices were my rationale.
Further discussion? Thank you. Senator Schrader?
This is not difficult. This is easy. And I'm a little upset that we're getting beat up for trying to do something nice and creative. If this is the way the legislature is going to be treated, by people out there, I guess I'm going to adopt a different stance. The co-chairs, and Wayne, you correct me if I'm wrong here, made a conscious decision against the best advice of LFO to say, okay, you know, if the FEOP program's not rolling out in sufficient levels to use this money that we were given by the federal government after many long and arduous discussions with them, then, geez, let's be creative and give some other options. I would think we'd be getting positive kudos from the advocates out there about being open to that. It turns out that that money's not available. The program, FEOP, as we rolled it out, is moving well. So that's our obligation. We also said, based on LFO's advice and previous discussions, we're going to go till November. We'll give us November of this year to decide if it's a go, no go, so we don't get caught with maintenance of effort issues. Very simple. Very simple. Okay, the obvious answer we've heard is that they're not committing yet. They're not sure. CMS is unsure. I don't think we should be unsure with our fiduciary responsibility for the state of Oregon. This should be a positive. We gave it a shot. Didn't work out. It's not working out. We do the responsible thing. Follow through on FIA. End of discussion.
Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. I'm sorry, Senator.
No vote, too.
Do you object?
One on the left and one on the right.
I'm sorry. Please, on the record. So, Senator West and Senator Barker, do I need to read
it? I think they made it.
And Representative Boone.
No, I'm going to go with it.
Okay.
So, Westland and Barker object.
I thought, yeah, they scooped in.
Good day.
Item number 16, Military Department, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $248,617 from the Emergency Fund and approve the establishment of one half-time limited duration public information representative, one position, and two full-time limited duration administrative service, two positions, with the understanding that the military department will continue to aggressively seek federal funds for the positions. If federal funds are secured for the reintegration program, the Department of Administrative Services is requested to unschedule any remaining general fund. The military department established a program in the 03-05 biennium to assist soldiers and airmen returning from war zone deployments back into civilian life by shifting two federal employees from training and personnel services to support integration services. Due to the high demand of these services, two positions are not sufficient to cover all the counties in Oregon. The military department is attempting to secure additional federal funding for the positions, so far without success, but is hopeful that the Department of Defense will include funding in the National Guard budget for reintegration purposes. The military department also requests an additional half-time position to enhance communications with National Guard members and the general public. The military department reports that the workload has increased considerably since mobilization of the Oregon National Guard soldiers to the Middle East, and that is work that cannot be deferred or absorbed by other staff. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the motion.
Discussion.
Madam Chair, I heartily approve of this direction for a number of reasons. There's an element that's missing here, and we talked about it in subcommittee yesterday, and I wanted to bring it out on the record today, and it is that there needs to be a greater coordination at the local level of emergency management, county managers, and the military department. And that, frankly, is part of the communication issues that occurred in the breakdown of communication and command issues and confusion that occurred in Hurricane Katrina. And I fear that we are in a similar opportunity for that to occur here should we have a Mount St. Helens event that blankets the valley with ash, God forbid, a dirty bomb in Portland or something of that nature. What I would hope that we would ask the military department to do, and I hope to request of them, is to come back to the e-board with a request for a part-time position to help the State Defense Force be reformulated, which are typically a group of ex-military officers and other individuals who have expertise that want to donate their time to the state of Oregon to be that liaison between the military department and the local managers, so we don't have these miscommunication issues that, again, were so prevalent down in the south in Hurricane Katrina. It's my hope that we will take a look at that in ensuing e-boards. It's a very inexpensive proposition, maybe a $40,000 or $50,000, just to help that coordinated effort. We get a tremendous benefit with the State Defense Force volunteering their time to help us out in a professional manner in any particular opportunities that may present themselves to us. Thank you.
Representative, we have appointed an interim task force on emergency management and joint committee, and I think that'll be one of the issues they address.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Item number 20, Senator Morris.
There's maybe another one in between if you want to do that.
Did I skip one? I did it again.
Yeah.
Item number 17. I'm sorry.
Say it again.
I cross them off prematurely. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $98,186 and establish one permanent full-time fiscal analyst, one position, 0.83 FTE, to support the Civil Engineering Squadron at Kingsley Field in Klamath Falls. The Oregon Military Department was notified in August 2005 of the availability of additional funding to support a position to provide accounting and budgeting services for the Civil Engineering Squadron at Kingsley Field Air National Guard based in Klamath Falls. The Civil Engineering Program provides facility operations and maintenance for Kingsley Field. Civil Engineering programs are funded through the federal state agreements and normally require state matching funds. The National Guard has, however, authorized 100% federal funds for this position. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
I agree. Discussion. Objection. So ordered. Now we're to item number 20. Senator Morris,
thank
Oregon
you.
Youth Authority.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board allocate $334,066 from the Emergency Fund, increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $20,124, and approve one limited duration position equivalent of 0.75 FTE to implement improved hiring practices, better training, and policy review activities in the Oregon Youth Authority. The Oregon Youth Authority appointed the Youth Safety and Abuse Prevention Review Committee to look at its policies and procedures after a former youth probation officer was arrested and later convicted of abusing youth in OYA's custody while he was an employee of the agency. The 2005 legislature directed OYA by budget note to report to the Interim Joint Legislative Judiciary Committee on the review committee's final report and recommendations, and report to the Emergency Board if added resources were needed. The Judiciary Committee has not yet met or considered the report. However, OYA has asked for funding to address the Review Committee's recommendations to 1. Improve hiring practices, including supplemental testing for all job applicants and psychological examinations for new field staff. 2. Expand training for staff and providers. 3. Improve written policies and procedures. 4. Establish an internal complaint investigation office. And 5. Establish an external complaint office. The subcommittee recommends funding the first three issues: improved hiring practices, expanded training, and improved written policies and procedures at this time. Funding for the internal and external complaint investigation offices should be deferred until the Interim Judiciary Committee has had an opportunity to review the proposals and there has been more discussion on the structure and scope of these offices and their expected outcomes. The subcommittee expressed its interest that these issues be dealt with in a timely manner, with the agency returning to the Emergency Board meeting in January of 2006. Madam Chair, there are
Two requests. One is formal within this report of the and recommendation of the subcommittee, and that is that the Judiciary Committee do, in fact, add this to their agenda, the interim committee, to review the Internal Complaint Investigation Office and the establishment of the External Complaint Office. I would like to add, and with the permission of the chair of our committee, a second request, and that is that at our January e-board meeting, that OIA, in conjunction with DAS, look at the transferability of the investment in these hiring practices, policies, and procedures, as it might relate to applying to other agencies and their hiring practices and procedures. We're investing about $200,000 here specifically for these activities, and it would be, I think, an error on our part if we don't look at how those could be expanded to other agencies as well. And so this is an excellent opportunity, I think, to look at how we protect those children that are within our responsibility by having better hiring practices, better testing, better review than the policies and procedures, and how those might transfer then to other agencies. So I would specifically ask a request that we add that to our agenda and have DAS and OIA bring back to us how this investment could be transferred to other agencies as well.
Further discussion, Senator Devlin, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important for us to move ahead with this request, and I do think that though that Senator Morse brought an issue to us this morning that is worthy of further exploration. I also think it's important to follow the will of the body, and that's why the original budget note in terms of the Judiciary Committee reviewing these items I think is very important to follow through on. However, in the interest and timeliness, I hope that that happens prior to our e-board meeting in January so that we can expedite some of this work that needs to be done so we don't necessarily repeat the very unfortunate case of a Boyles case in the future. And that's why I think we should proceed with this today, as Senator Morse has indicated.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Winters?
I, too, would just echo Senator Devlin that we move very rapidly on this request. The case, the Boyles case, was a horrific case, one that should not have occurred, had all systems were in place, and it went on for years. And it's kind of interesting because we're dealing with OIA, but the other agency that also needs to be involved in these practices to make certain that they have good job applicants and that vetting is Human Services, because they too deal with children and they, with when we're talking foster care and some of those other issues. So, but I think that that's for a future discussion where you bring them all together and not just just OIA, and hopefully what OIA, the tools that they develop can be used in the other agency so that we're not having to duplicate efforts for OIA and Human Services. But I think it's imperative that we move on this, that so that children that are in our care and custody are not at risk, that we provide a way of protecting those that we are responsible for.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Co-Chairman. Colleagues, when I read this external review of the Oregon Youth Authority, and this is my first time reviewing this, I don't think this is a report about protecting children. I think it's a report about protecting some inept managers. I would encourage you folks to turn to page 6 of the executive summary, and if I might rhetorically just go through this very quickly. And I'm going to ask questions. It says the telltale signs of a pedophile existed, exhibiting grooming behavior were there. I'd like to know what were those. And were noticed by others. I'd like to know by who. The report mentions neither of those. While those observations did not provide proof that something was amiss, I'd like to know according to who. They did give a rise to questions in people's minds. Some of the actions Boyles took in dealing with the youth, it goes on to talk about. However, when supervisors did challenge some of these behaviors as exceeding the limits of professional boundaries with youth under this supervision, he responded with threats, intimidation, attorneys, and manipulation. I'd like to know who those supervisors were and where they are now in the Oregon Youth Authority. I'd also like to know if the supervisors were confronted with threats, intimidation, attorneys, and manipulations. How did those supervisors handle that? And I want to know if the supervisor saw that as any type of little red flag that if he's doing this to the boss, he may also be doing this to children. Move to second paragraph. Talks about all of the other situations, referring to other situations within OIA, were investigated. I'd like to know what those situations were. I'd like to know any other situations of sexual relationships. I'd like to know any other instances of drug or alcohol situations within the Oregon Youth Authority and how those situations were handled by management. You continue to go down on page 6. Even though nothing could be proven at the time of the investigations, at least one former employee and a possible da-da-da-da-da, I'd like to know where police reports filed on all situations that are mentioned here. And I want to know, did OSP determine that there wasn't adequate information, or is that determined by folks within OIA, and they determined not to call the Oregon State Police? Colleagues, if you look at the recommendations that go through this summary, I would care to contend that these are points that should have been addressed 30 years ago when OIA was established. Give me a break. That we're going to go through and we're going to now do intensive training for employees. Give me a break. These kids are supposed, or these professionals are supposed to know how to handle these situations. Now, I don't know what the politics is behind this, but something's amiss that we're about to brush under the table the fact that the Oregon Youth Authority mishandled a situation, was called on it, and now we're going to pretend that by giving a couple hundred thousand and accepting some ridiculous report, this situation is going to correct itself. I ask you to look at the points that are being addressed. Policy review, where we're going to now create a new policy manual. I ask you, business owners, would you spend $645 on average per employee to revamp your personnel manual? $645 per employee? I wouldn't. I think I could find it a little cheaper. We're dealing with 230 employees in the Oregon Youth Authority, and we're looking at over $150,000 to revamp our personnel manual. Improved hiring practices. Right now, you can go to work as a lead worker in fast food and make more money than a shift worker at OIA. Has anyone asked that question? Maybe we ought to look at the caliber of employees we're bringing into the Oregon Youth Authority. We're going to have an internal complaint investigation office. Maybe we ought to tell the responsible manager to go sit at his desk and take the phone calls that probably were coming in on this situation. Because I'm willing to bet little Timmy's mom, who had a concern, knew how to get a hold of the OIA. I'm pretty sure they knew how to get in there and make a phone call. Maybe if we had someone pick up the phone and respond to it, we could save ourselves another $222,000. Colleagues, this isn't right. I think there's a lot more questions that need to be asked.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Richardson and Senator.
Madam Co-Chair, our committee during the session also was looking at this, and we received one report from the investigative group and had some conversation with the head of that investigation, and it was clear that this investigation was focused on the Boyles case and on what can be done to help assure that this doesn't happen again. And in that regard, then I support the recommendations and what they did. But what Representative Smith is referring to, I believe, is the systemic problems that are inherent in OIA that have not been addressed by this investigation. There were actual letters from relatives 10 years ago to members, that staff people that presently work for OIA, telling them that there was suspected abuse going on and there was no action taken. And so where's the complicity? There's been no investigation as to those that work for OYA who knew about this, but because of whether it be an old boy system or incompetency or a failure to file allegations of abuse, whatever is really gone on, they took no action, which allowed Boyles to continue his activities for over a decade. And so this proposal, I believe, is worthy of support as found by the subcommittee. But I believe that we should not allow this to sit, and that we need to go further into what's going on within the structure of OYA and determine what wrongdoing, illegal activities, complicity, violations of ethical standards took place that allowed Boyles to continue those activities for over a decade.
Madam Chair.
Just a moment. Senator Winters, we have Senator Devlin, and then I'll call on you.
I understand the indignation that people have over the Boyles case, and it is perhaps one of the most unfortunate examples we have of a breakdown in state government in terms of someone abusing children. It is not obviously the only case, and that is a very unfortunate circumstance too. This has been an activity that we have seen in a number of different instances when employees come into contact with agencies. This is not a matter of merely 250 employees. In terms of custody employees, transitional employees, and probation and parole employees, I don't have an exact number, but I would guess probably 1,200 to 1,300 employees in OYA. Also, many of those children are in units within some of the facilities where only one or two staff are going to be on duty at any time, and it's, I think, incumbent on us that this is not repeated again. Part of this screening activity is to screen out potential parties like this. Madam Chair, I know that you and your husband like to separate your work, but your husband has a very extensive history in investigation of sex crimes and understands clearly some of the issues surrounding pedophiles. Very serious issue. And I think we need to put some of these things in place because we do have children under our custody and care, and even if they are being incarcerated for delinquent activity and in some case criminal activity, they deserve our protection. In being indignant about the Boyles case is understandable. It is an entire breakdown. I would also like, this is not meant to be an excuse and should not be even interpreted as an excuse, but we need to get our facts straight too. Right. The OYA has existed for 10 years. Much of Mr. Boyles' activity occurred under the Department of Human Services, under the former probably Children's Services Division, in terms of, and to be honest, one of our concerns is, in terms of like Senator Morse expressing, in terms of other agencies, in terms of Child Protective Services, the same types of situations occur in terms of close contact between personnel and vulnerable children. And so we think that that should be looked into also. But I think we need to make this step forward. Mr. Boyles has got his right to serve. He's been sentenced to a fairly lengthy period of time, probably will not get out in his lifetime, which is what he deserves. But we need to see that there are no more future Boyles cases within our facilities or within our programs.
Thank you, sir. Senator Wayne.
During the last session, I believe it was, and with Chair Gordley in Public Safety, wrote the letter that asked for the investigation when it came to our attention of the Boyles case. What is occurring now is an outgrowth of that letter and other legislators becoming involved, asking some of the questions that you raised. Reverend Smith were raised in that letter and through the Public Safety Committee. And it may be well if we provide members here with some of that background information so that you're current as to what prompted this review and the investigation and the recommendations that have come forward by both the state police and others, as well as the attorney general and others. There's been extensively involved with this. It did start in human services and not in OYA. And that's the reason for saying it sent a letter to the Department of Human Services asking them to take the same kind of look, because you cannot separate those two agencies because both of them have responsibility for children. And both of them, when you're talking about dealing with the issue of sexual predators and what have you, is a need to make certain that we are hiring individuals who don't have those backgrounds and what have you. So I appreciate the comment from Senator Devlin, and I know that Senator Gordy went away, because this is one that your subcommittee really doubled into during session, really insisted on an investigation. And although some parts of the investigation, because of the court activity that was taking place, we weren't even able to get during that process until Mr. Boyles and Multnomah County had completed their work to make certain that he will never hit the ground again and that he will remain in prison. So, but your comments are well taken, and I think we're all just offended by what had happened.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Burton.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. First, I wish to be identified with the remarks made by Representative Richardson and also Senator Winters. We did have the opportunity to talk quite a bit about this very serious matter during the legislative session, and to talk about a course of action that would seek justice. I believe that the next level of review absolutely required is a Department of Justice review of what has occurred. And I will take it further and say that the Department of Justice review is where we should have started, but we did not. We now have something to build on. We need to do that. Again, a part of what we are trying to get to is correction of the identification and correction of behaviors that exploit and damage children. Now, it's one thing to say that we're going to do psychological evaluations of all future employees. But what about the current employees? And I mean no disrespect to any current employee, but this report doesn't address that. I would turn to our chairs, and I've not had the opportunity to talk with both of you together about making a formal request of the Department of Justice for that review, but I'm asking for that now. I think that's where we need to take this. Again, there are some activities that are going to go forward within the Oregon Youth Authority, supported by the action that we take here today, and that's appropriate. But we need to send, it's not even about sending a signal. We need to acknowledge that damage was done, damage that took at least one life that we know of. And I am aware of another young man who's still in custody who is suicidal as a result of his experience with Mr. Boyles. I want us to exhaust all avenues that get us to justice, a sense of justice and closure. That would be appropriate in my mind.
Okay. Further discussion? Well, Senator, speaking for myself, I would support an effort by the Department of Justice to review this and see. I think that's maybe a component that's been missing, to have them take a look at some of the procedures and who was involved. I think that would be helpful to put this behind us, to correct, as you said, let's have some correction from this. So, and I don't know, can can you speak to how that would, how we could proceed with that? Is that?
Madam Chair, I'm sure we can follow up with the department and see what their abilities to do something like that are.
All right.
I'll join speaker in that joint letter.
And in addition, I might point out that your own Judiciary Committee will be and is expected to be looking at this as soon as they're appointed.
Okay. Further discussion? President Smith?
Thank you, Chair Menace. I just want to appreciate or acknowledge the leadership of yourself and Chair Courtney and Senator Gordley. I appreciate the calmness you brought to the situation and the leadership you brought to it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Any objection to item 20? Are there any no votes? Seeing none, so ordered. Item 21, Department of State Police, Representative Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board allocate $235,035 from the Emergency Fund and establish three limited duration positions, which is 0.81 FTE, in the Department of the State Police for the development of the Public Safety Wireless Infrastructure Replacement Plan, and increase the federal funds expenditure limitation for the Department of State Police by $2,495,432 for the Integrated Wireless Network Project with the U.S. Department of Justice. Combination of aging and often unreliable state agency wireless systems, new federal narrowband requirements for mobile radio systems, and the need to have all state and local first responders able to communicate with each other on a reliable system led the 2005 legislature to instruct the Office of Emergency Management in House Bill 2101 to develop a public safety wireless infrastructure replacement plan for Oregon. Initial estimates of implementing this plan range from $300 to $500 million over the next four biennia. This request begins to put in place the necessary staff and resources to develop and implement this plan. The subcommittee is recommending three limited duration positions and funding for 6 months to augment and support the work of an outside contractor. This contractor will be responsible for providing the conceptual engineering design and implementation strategy of a new statewide system. The agency will return for the remainder of the necessary funding for this biennium after the project has an initial review by the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and other funding sources have been explored. A $2.5 million increase in federal funds expenditure limitation is also recommended so that the agency may accept and spend federal funds to upgrade wireless equipment and structures along the I-5 corridor that will benefit both state and law enforcement agencies. The subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objections? Approved. Item number 23, Economic and Community Development Department. Representative Susan Morgan, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation for the Economic and Community Development Department by $718,297, with the understanding that the department may provide interim financing to the North Bend Airport District until the bonds are sold, and request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the debt service pending certification of the project by the director. The subcommittee also recommends that OECDD seek the concurrence of the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department of Administrative Services before requesting that the funds be rescheduled. The 2005 legislature authorized $10 million in lottery bonds for a new passenger terminal at the North Bend Airport, contingent on the district obtaining all necessary permits. The legislature allocated lottery funds for debt service on these bonds and directed OECDD to request expenditure limitation when the director certified that the district had sufficient funding to complete the project. OECDD reports that not all of the permits have been obtained, and it's unlikely that the bond sale can occur in November 2005 as originally anticipated. OECDD is working with the district, the Economic Revitalization Team, and other agencies on the permitting process so that the bond sale can occur as soon as possible. OECDD can use its existing loan authority for interim financing to allow the district to proceed with the project until the bond sale requirements are met. However, the debt service fund should be unscheduled pending certification by the director and the actual bond sale. OECDD should seek the concurrence of LFO and BAM before the funds are rescheduled to ensure oversight of the project. The General Government Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Discussion. Representative Boone?
Just a comment. This is a really good thing for the whole coast. It's good for our economy. We've waited a long time for it. And thank you very much.
We had an extensive discussion in the subcommittee around this issue, and I would really like also to commend the work that the OECDD did on this project. They've really gone the extra mile to keep this project on budget and on time, and by offering the option of gap financing, they really have made it possible for this project to actually go towards completion with no delay at all. So kudos to OECDD. I think this is the way that Oregon wants this department to operate.
Good government.
Further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Item 28, Department of State Lands, Representative Boone.
Thank you. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $60,000 for the cost of changing the Bend office location, with the understanding that, one, the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the additional limitation until the actual moving costs are incurred and a signed lease agreement as well as updated expenditure reports are provided to the Department of Administrative Services and Legal Fiscal Office. And number two, Department of State Lands provides information to DAS and LFO on any possible savings to be achieved this biennium through avoidance of any current costs as a result of the relocation. The landlord of the existing office location notified the department earlier this year that due to the expansion plans of an adjacent tenant, the agency's lease would not be renewed when it expires December 31st, 2005. The agency has identified new office location, which will provide adequate space not only for the staff but for on-site storage of equipment and supplies. Moving costs, tenant improvements, furniture purchases, and other one-time expenses are estimated to be $27,708. Additional rent costs are estimated to be $32,292 for the period of January 1st, 2006 through June 30th, 2007. And as an aside, the director did let us know that this was actually less than they were paying for their other rent and would accommodate them with the additional size. General Government Committee Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion. Objection. Seeing none, so ordered. Item 29, Representative Morgan.
The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $364,080 and approve the establishment of five limited duration positions, which translates into 3.75 FTE for activities related to two federal grants from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. On July 18, 2005, the Department of State Lands received legislative permission to apply, and it has been notified by the federal agency that it will be awarded these grants. One grant will provide funding for three staff positions, as well as services and supplies, to conduct the monitoring required under the state programmatic general permit, which was issued to the department by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on July 18, 2005. The SPGP is intended to streamline the environmental permitting process. The other grant provides funding for two staff positions as well as services and supplies for activities relating to wetland restoration projects. A key outcome of this project is improved coordination of the various state and federal programs for wetland restoration with the goal of increased efficiency and a reduction in obstacles and disincentives to landowners who wish to participate in the programs. Required matching funds will be provided by in-kind services of existing staff. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion on the minutes today. Objection. Okay, none to order. Item 31, Department of State Lands, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I'd like to do is call Sue McGlashan forward at this time, if you might indulge me.
Yeah, please do.
Uh-oh.
There we go.
Call me forward.
She's in trouble now.
Emergency board members, this is Ms. McGlashan's last presentation to the emergency board, and I would just like to take this opportunity to let her know that we have very much appreciated her services, her the work that you've done in the natural resources area, and particularly the work that you've done in the K-12 area has, to me, been invaluable. And I can't even tell you the number of times that I've come to you and you've given me information, often on a very short time frame and in very inconvenient circumstances to yourself. And you've always been very gracious and very helpful. And I just wanted to let you know that you have some very big shoes to fill over there, and that we wish you the greatest success when you move over to budget and management and fill some very big shoes over there also.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wanted to maybe not repeat, but to echo Representative Morgan's comments. And although I'm newer to this than some people are here in terms of ways and means, I had a very enjoyable session working with Ms. McGlashan this last session, and found her to be an invaluable resource. And my next task is basically to call Mr. Rocco every week to see who is going to replace Ms. McGlashan. Because I think it is a definite loss to us and a definite benefit to DAS and budget and management, or as I politely refer to them as the dark side. But I think she will be sorely missed. But I think we will see her back here, and I'm just hoping that when she comes back to subcommittees, that she will be more forthcoming than other members of BAM, because I have wondered what their real purpose is in these subcommittee meetings. Is it to provide us the executive's perspective, or to keep us in as much in the dark as possible?
Can I just say,
I
became a member in 99, and I was handed the gavel midterm in my freshman year of the education subcommittee. And I was scared out of my mind. And Sue sat alongside me in those subcommittee meetings, and with a very steadying force, was very informed, pulled me with the gavel. And this was an excellent staff person in that capacity. We are very sorry to see you go, and hope that, you know, if BAM isn't all that it's cracked up to be, come back.
That's right.
So thank you for all your efforts over the years that I've worked with you. It's been an honor to work with you. You've done a great job, and I think you've helped clarify a very sometimes contentious budget, and you've helped us work through all those issues. So if you get there and decide that's not what you want to do, we'll take you back. Love to have you. Well, thank you for all your service.
And with that, Madam
Chair, if I could just make a few comments. I appreciate all your kind remarks. I really do, and it's been great working with I haven't worked with all of you since I've been here, but many of you, Senator Gordley, we've worked together quite a bit, and it's just been a great pleasure. And I... don't want to let this opportunity pass without saying that it's also been just a phenomenal experience. You can tell us we're getting to working with the people in Legislative Fiscal. They are just incredible and dedicated to you and this institution, and it's just going to be a really big loss in my life to not be working with them anymore. Thank you.
And with that, Representative Morgan, do you want to go to item 31?
And don't hesitate to be asking staff questions on this.
Yeah.
The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $446,261 for a one-year U.S. Fish and Wildlife grant to assist in the revision of the Elliott State Forest Habitat Conservation Plan. On July 18, 2005, the Department of State Lands received legislative approval to apply for this grant. The revised HCP would cover a number of federally listed species and allow forestry activities, including logging, to continue under this incidental take permit and in compliance with the Federal Endangered Species Act. Completion of the revised plan and acquisition of the permit is expected by September of 2006. The Department of State Lands reported that whether the State Land Board adopts the revised HCP will be based on the costs and benefits in terms of future revenues and operational certainty. The department needs this additional federal funds expenditure limitation to pass through the funding to the Oregon State Department of Forestry, which is working with DSL and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in revising the HCP. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion. Objection. Hearing none, so ordered. And with that, ladies and gentlemen,
Madam Chair,
please start agenda today, Senator Morris.
If I may, I'd like to make a comment. Draw the board's attention to what I think is a potentially emerging emergency type situation. And the acknowledging the receipt of agenda item number 7 really kind of draws attention to a deficiency that I think we all recognized when we approved our budget for 05-07. Agenda item number 7 is a summary of the allocations of what was a special purpose appropriation of $130 million for state employees. We all know that the allocation that we made for the developmental disability community programs to the tune of about 6 cents per hour on top of essentially 4 years without COLA increases. And I think this is playing itself out in a turnover ratio within these programs that is clearly unacceptable and puts the programs at risk and the participants, those that receive benefits in the programs, at risk with such a high rate of turnover that has increased 30% in the last 18 months, and it's now up to a rate of 65%. I would suggest that there are few organizations that I know of that could successfully complete whatever mission they have, whether it's public or private, with a turnover rate of 65%. And I would hope that somewhere along the line in our future discussions and agenda items that we would have the opportunity to look. Now, DAS is coming back with a detailed report of where the $130 million is going. There may be something that is within that that's not expended that we can make some adjustments for these developmental disability programs. But I think we're approaching an emergency situation within these programs with the level of funding and the of increase for compensation for these employees that work in these programs. And I think it's something that we need to be conscious of and track and hopefully find an opportunity to put it on the agenda and deal with it in the future, because it is a very serious issue. And you know, we know we cannot live without the services of these providers. And if we were forced to pick up these services at state compensation levels, it would look entirely different than it does today. So I think we have some work to do there and would hope that we would find an opportunity to look at that in the future. And thank you for the opportunity to make the comment.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments? Well, without objection, we're...